Well, good morning. I'll tell you my own bio, as I understand that you don't have a copy. So, I am a professor of nursing at Azusa Pacific University, so I came quite a distance to be here, but it's wonderful to be here. And I am director of our homeless healthcare outreach from our School of Nursing, and we've been doing outreach to the homeless since 1997, so it's been a number of years now. And I'm also involved with a local coalition. I happen to be president of the board, a volunteer position with the East San Gabriel Valley Coalition for the Homeless that actually operates the centers where we serve the homeless. I found as I got involved in taking care of the homeless, I became aware of how much suffering there was in that population, and I felt compelled to really try to do more to relieve the situation. I need to acknowledge my co-authors, Cheryl Westlake Canary and Lori Lang, fellow faculty members, assisting with, we're just beginning to do research on our population, and they've been my motivators to get some research going. I tend to be clinically focused, so they brought a good aspect to it. So this is some of our preliminary research and interest. I have no disclosures. These are the objectives. We'll talk about challenges faced by the homeless, and we'll talk about what community health nurses or other healthcare professionals can do to help. It is nice to follow the presentation that preceded mine. Some of the challenges faced by the populations are very similar. We do have, in California, they found that there's three major systems that discharge to homelessness. Some of you might be familiar with it. One is the correctional system, one is hospitals, and one is the foster care system. So they people tend to come out of those systems and possibly not have a home to go to. This is just a brief outline and representation. I'll just talk a little bit about the nature of the problems in the population. I'm sure most of you here probably are familiar with it. I could almost say ditto to the last presenter because the challenges faced by our population are very similar. I'll talk a little bit about our initial research. I have just two brief case studies to share, and then I have recommendations on how we can help people that have chronic health problems. This is just to bring you into Los Angeles County, where we are. This is the homeless count in Los Angeles County. Very distressing. It went up by 8% in the last 2 years, and that it had a downward trend prior to that. And the stimulus package, it helped quite a bit. There was an HPRP program. Some of you might have heard of that. It was Rapid Rehousing Program and Prevention Program, and that helped. But it's ended, and we're seeing the results of the end of that program now. So we target our areas, the San Gabriel Valley. We are one of 8 service planning areas. The county is divided up into 8 areas. We're the service planning area 3. And our estimate of homeless in our region is 5 to 10,000, and we have about 2 million people in our region. On the earlier slide, LA County has close to 10 million people. So large numbers. So what we do, we actually are a mobile clinic. We go out to care for the homeless where they are. So we go out anywhere from 1 to 2 times a week. And our staffing is I like to have a minimum of 2 nursing faculty. Sometimes I have 4. And we are nurse practitioners, so we can diagnose and treat on site. We'll see about 25 to 35 clients per session, and since 1997 we've had over 3,000 client visits. The shelter itself has about 150 to 200 people per night, and the shelter operates primarily during the winter, but we also go to a drop-in center at a church where people come for daily services. And this is just to give you a visual of where we're operating and what we do. We pack up supplies, we put them in a van and carry them out to the site, and the sites where we go give us their church sites, and they give us a Sunday school room to operate in. And it's nice because we have good space there, so I'm able to bring a large number of students. I can bring 12 to 18 students each time, and the students actually see their own patients and are overseen by the faculty. So those are the students and the faculty. So just coming back to generally about the relationship of health and homelessness, and again, I'm sure all of you are aware of this, so just bear with me. Anyway, sanitary housing, of course, is central to effective health care. Homelessness exacerbates everything. Without homes, people are exposed to the elements, violence, overcrowded shelters, poor diet, and lack of rest. Here is one case study I have for you. I think, was there another slide in there? No. Okay. This was from two seasons ago. We had a 63-year-old Asian man in our shelter. He was a retired postal worker with private health insurance and a private doctor. He had diabetes. They were giving him metformin. And those are his blood sugar readings. They're random. Those are not fastings, but they're still just some of the highest blood sugars I've ever seen. You know, he was running over 500 on two occasions. We sent him, when he was over 500, we did send him to the emergency room, emergency department. All he would get was a prescription and sent back to us, and that was it. And what was so discouraging to me is that over 3 months, there was absolutely no change. Despite our best efforts, we had made sure he had his medicine, that he knew how to take it. We did diet counseling. We made referrals, and there was no change. Case number two, this was just this past season. We had a 48-year-old Hispanic female, U.S. born. She'd been in our shelter off and on for 2 years. We all knew her. We were actually fond of her. She had poorly controlled asthma. We had made numerous referrals to our local federally qualified health center that has the grant from the federal government to give health care to the homeless. She would often go, and she would get her medicines, but then she would run out again. And she wouldn't take the daily steroids that chronic asthmatics are supposed to take. And she went in just after Christmas last year and in respiratory distress into the ER, and she passed away that night. So that was really distressing. So this is what really motivated me to take a look at some of these chronic illnesses and to ask myself, is there more we could be doing out in the field to help people manage these? Again, these are similar, I think, to the numbers the last speaker presented, that the hazard ratio of all-cause mortality is about 4 times greater in the homeless. So starting a year ago, we began a chart review. We've developed an instrument for the chart review. I do have a copy of the instrument with me. It's not ready for general distribution yet. We're still testing it. We're hoping to publish it eventually. But if you want to take a look at it, I have a copy with me. So we developed an instrument for diagnosing chronic disease through the chart review. And so these are the types of illnesses that we're focusing on: hypertension, CHF, diabetes, metabolic syndrome, respiratory, which includes asthma and COPD. And we have reviewed so far 290 cases. These are unduplicated. These are not visits. These are actual cases. And this is a little bit about our sample so far. There's a mean age of 43.6. We have 71% male, 29% female. We have a large Hispanic population, 47%, white, 24%. African American 7.6, Native American 3.1, Asian Pacific Islander 2.4, and then we have a lot that either the data didn't get written on the chart or the person didn't want to disclose. So that's a little bit about what our population looks like. And then there's a place on our health history questionnaire where we ask them to report on their own health. And I was surprised to see that 71% rated their own health as good or fair by self-report. And these are mostly people that are either unsheltered or staying in our shelter. So they're not people that are, there's other definitions of homelessness. These are not people that are doubled up or sleeping on somebody's sofa, that sort of thing. These are people that are really what you would call on the streets. The shelters are only open at night, so the rest of the time they're outside all day. 50% reported smoking. That could be low or high, depending on how you look at it. It's higher than the normal, the general population, but maybe considered low for those who are homeless. 40% alcohol use, And I, that is consistent with other statistics I've seen. But again, it's not everyone. Some people assume that all the homeless are alcoholics or drug addicts. And only 15% reported illegal drug use. And I'm not sure if that's just a low self-report for social acceptability or if we have a lower rate in our, among our population. Again, though, compared with the general population, it's high. So here's the conditions that we found. These conditions ran between 14% and up to almost 20%, 19% for psychiatric. We couldn't quantify the metabolic syndrome. We're still kind of working with that. It's pretty general. It could be a lot of people because metabolic syndrome has a lot of criteria. It's easy to fit into that category. It could be large percentage of the whole U.S. population. So that one's not quantified yet. Hypertension, we determined 27%. In all of our cases, we had a mean systolic of 136 and a mean diastolic of 88. So generally, our population runs high blood pressure. And I've seen some of the highest blood pressures I've ever seen in my career out there, just like these blood sugars that are just, you can't believe it. So how do we meet the challenges? Now I have some recommendations on meeting the challenges of the homeless. Am I out of time? 5 minutes, okay. All right, good. So here's some recommendations for how to help the homeless with their chronic health problems. And I've been talking to healthcare providers, not just what we've learned on site, but what others are doing in our area. I visited other mobile clinics that go out on site. UCLA has been doing that for a while, and some other schools are doing it as well. Anyway, some of the things that we can do is to really get them started on their meds and order labs and try to do that right away. But there's kind of a tension there between trying to do primary care on the street versus connecting them to care. How much do you offer when you're out there and how much do they need to come in for? And of course, it's far preferable to connect them to care and get them established with a primary care provider. But for a lot of reasons, that's difficult. And so then you think, well, if we bring them, I think of the lady with the asthma, if we had brought her steroid inhalers, maybe she would not have died, maybe. Also with the homeless, you have to be very flexible with your scheduling. When they're there, you need to take care of them. We can't be real strict about, oh, you're late for your appointment, we're not going to see you today, come back in 2 weeks. It doesn't work with them, you'll lose them. Also long waits, they tend not to want to sit and wait. They aren't comfortable in waiting rooms. They've got other things pressing in their lives, and so you kind of have to be there and take care of them on their terms if you're going to be effective, and just get over trying to get them to go with your terms. Also, again, as I said here at the bottom, think about what's better to provide in a clinic and what's better to provide on the street. Also, if you're giving out medications to them, you want to give them in small amounts, and I give them in their original containers. I've noticed some places break them down into little Ziploc plastic bags with little pills, but I always think they need to have all the warnings on it, just like you would give medicine to anyone else. It's got to be a bottle or a package with all the warnings, that clearly labeled what it is, what the dose is, with the patient's name and all of that. Sometimes they get stopped by the police and they get frisked, and if they find a little bag of pills, they'll think it's something that they're dealing. So, but again, smaller containers or smaller amounts are good because they do tend to lose them or you have them get stolen because they have nowhere to secure them. Also, we help them pay for their meds. I have some grant funds that help cover medications, and that really helps because a lot of times they just bring me their prescription that they got at the ER or from the doctor, and they have no money to buy their medicine. I'm hoping that with healthcare reform that there's going to be more coverage for them, that they can get more care locally, that they can go to private doctors, that they can get Well, this would be wishful thinking. I have a good health insurance policy. Could they not have a health insurance policy at least as good as mine? As you know, they can't get Medi-Cal because unless they have children, they cannot qualify for Medi-Cal. So most don't have any health care. And they should be able to get a subsidized premium because most of them are very low income. And then find the local healthcare provider and make referrals. When we're doing follow-through on ours, we try to find out if they went in for care. And one thing or I go with them. I have done that for a number of patients where I know that they really need specialty care. I go with them. I try to make the time in my schedule. It's not easy, but I try to say I will see. I don't carry them generally in my car. That's kind of a no-no from our employer, but you know, I'll give them a bus pass, a taxi, a dial a ride, whatever I can get them to get there, and then I'll meet them there and see the doctor with them, because then I can hear what is being said to them and what treatment they're supposed to follow, because they sometimes don't understand. Bus passes, we give bus passes. So anything you can do to help them with transportation, but that's particular to our area. I love the transportation in Boston. I think it's marvelous. I don't know why we don't have it in Los Angeles. So, Yeah, we used to. We used to have tracks and trains, but down the middle of our streets in LA, and they took them out. So, it's transportation's a huge problem in our area, because this is here and that's there, and they have to try to get around. So, bus passes, taxi vouchers, or if your organization is large enough, if you have a van, like in our shelter, if we have to send someone to the ER, we do have a van that the shelter uses to take people to the ER. And they'll go back and get them. They'll call the shelter, and we go back and pick them up. So those are some ways to connect people to healthcare. Oh, and one year we had people at the Federally Qualified Health Center. I actually had a nurse practitioner there to receive the referrals the next day. So I could tell them, tomorrow when you go to the health center, you will see one of our nurses. And that really helped, because they didn't have to stay in the waiting room, and the nurse was acquainted with the case, and she could render them care, and that was a really good connection. Some of the issues are that they're frightened of health care. They haven't had a lot of health care in their lives, a lot of them, especially if they're immigrants from Mexico. They've had very little care, so they're frightened of the health care system. And so you really have to coax them in and provide teaching and reassurance. And a little bit about the health education materials, be sure that they're established for low literacy. We do have low literacy rates. And review everything you give them very carefully in person. And then we also try to educate and motivate our patients about quitting substances. Some people tend to shrug their shoulders and say, oh, they're homeless and they're addicted and oh well, but I do believe you can make a difference if you can help them with those things. So we try to send them in for professional addiction treatment, but there's very little available. And we also do nutritional counseling. We try to weigh them, which they appreciate. We're trying to work with the food at the shelter. That's kind of a big issue, because the volunteers do it, and they do what they want to do, and they're bringing it free. And if you're going to be telling them what to bring, sometimes that doesn't go over well. So, but we do realize nutrition is very, very important to good health. So that's one of our goals. We want to try to tackle the food. And helping them with housing. Housing is the best medicine. And let's see, stable housing. And I'll just end with this statement, National Healthcare for the Homeless. They like to say that housing is healthcare. They also believe that housing is a right. And those are some of the mottos that you hear when you go to their conferences. And finally, I just want to acknowledge, of course, my employer, Azusa Pacific University, and I have grants from Sigma Theta Tau International and Kaiser Permanente Baldwin Park Community Benefits. It funds a lot of our outreach efforts. So thank you.